SBS live streams and podcasts are supported by advertising.
The next generation of Ray-Ban Meta is here. The Wayfarer Gen 2 AI glasses, now at Harvey Norman. Capture life hands-free with an ultra-wide 12-megapixel camera shooting bold photos and 3K video. Enjoy open-ear audio for music, calls and podcasts while staying aware of your surroundings. With Meta AI, get answers, capture content and navigate your day using only your voice. Plus, enjoy up to 8 hours of battery life. Ray-Ban Meta Wayfarer Gen 2, starting at $598 at Harvey Norman.
You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Hello and welcome to the On The Money podcast. It's Friday the 6th of March. I'm Stephanie Youssef filling in for Ricardo Gonçalves. The S&P ASX 200 has had its worst weekly drop since Donald Trump's so-called Liberation Day tariffs in April last year. It dropped 1% today to 8,851 as the war in Iran continues. Despite that decline, 6 of the 11 sectors ended higher, led by the rate-sensitive tech stocks. Materials were the biggest drag on the index, especially as BHP fell more than 4% after China's state-backed iron ore buyer told traders to not purchase any new BHP cargoes amid an ongoing standoff. And while oil spiked overnight, it fell more than 1% during Asian trade as the Trump administration weighs options to reduce the pressure on prices. Brent crude is trading at above $84.5 a barrel. For more on all of this, I spoke to Kyle Rodder, the senior market analyst at Capital.com. So, Kyle, the ASX 200 is tracking towards its worst week in nearly 4 years. What's driving those losses today?
Really, it's been the shock of the tensions in the Middle East and, you know, really the stark reality that there is the heightened possibility that this is a meaningful shock specifically to energy markets, but that that could also have an impact on sort of inflation growth around the world and therefore, you know, maybe a sort of fairly lasting impact, relatively speaking, on asset prices. So I think there was a high degree of complacency going into last weekend about the risk of a conflict in the Middle East. And now markets are having to very rapidly reprice to sort of reflect, again, the conflict and then obviously the risk of further escalation.
It's now been a week since the war in Iran and a week of investors now reacting to it. How have we seen global markets react this week?
Again, there's been this sort of, you know, general volatility, so risk aversion in equity markets. And, I mean, you've seen the biggest drawdowns happening in markets most sensitive effectively to energy prices and the shock of higher energy prices. We've seen a lot of volatility in German markets, a lot of volatility in Japanese markets. US markets, relatively speaking, have held up fairly well. The US, for example, is fairly energy independent. There have been other markets too that have seen some very violent movements, like in South Korea, for example. This is all to say that what the markets are fundamentally pricing in now is, once again, the potential disruption in the region, the impact that that could have on energy markets and the flow of energy out of the Middle East, the consequences that that will have on inflation and therefore company profits and interest rates too. And all of that is happening very quickly in an environment which is very fluid and, again, is at risk of escalation. So a lot of uncertainty and a lot of fear about, you know, what this crisis could do to both growth and inflation.
Oil prices continue to soar. They spiked 4% overnight. And if this war drags out, those higher prices could potentially create another inflation headache here at home. What kind of impacts could a drawn-out conflict have on the Australian economy and interest rates?
Well, quite simply, it could lead to higher inflation and interest rates that are higher than they would otherwise be, which is to say in our context, further interest rate hikes, or at least more imminent interest rate hikes from the RBA. Central banks often like to look through supply shocks as much as they can because they are often temporary distortions that can quickly be removed if there is a resolution to a crisis. But often, if these things do drag out, they do start to feed maybe not so much into energy prices directly as far as inflation goes, because, you know, obviously the data that the RBA looks at tries to strip, focuses not on the headline number for inflation, but, those trimmed mean figures that in principle takes out a lot of that volatility in energy. But at the end of the day, energy is crucial input to everything that we consume, or almost everything that we consume, and therefore it is going to have some kind of impact on inflation on an underlying basis too. So in short, it's an inflationary risk, and it's a risk that, at least in Australia, interest rates might have to be hiked more and sooner than previously thought.
It's one of the largest economies in the world, and yesterday China set its economic growth target to below 5% for the first time in over 30 years. What does that tell us about the state of the economic environment, and how did markets respond to that?
The markets responded negatively, albeit only marginally. And of course, in the week that we've had, because there's been so much focus on the Middle East, other news has sort of been washed out or pushed to the margins. But there's a few things to say about China. One, trend growth rates tend to slow over time, especially in what has been a developing economy for the last sort of 30 or 40 years. So inevitably, that rate of growth on an annual basis was going to fall. But what we're seeing in China is still an economy in a state of malaise, really still dealing with the fallout of the property crisis that peaked a few years ago but continues to plague consumption, investment activity in China. And a little bit of subtext here is that one way China has been trying to drive its growth going forward, or has been over the last few years, is to try and export its way out of the problem. And there is the fear that maybe some of that export demand may wane because of trade policy and things of that nature, and that will also weaken economic activity. So this suggests that, again, the Chinese economic growth miracle is something that is, slowing down, as one would expect, but also that they are dealing with the continued fallout of their property crisis and a very anemic domestic economy as a result.
The materials sector has had a big sell-off today, mostly to do with China's standoff with BHP over iron ore. Chinese traders have been told not to buy new BHP cargoes, and that sell-off is also being felt by some of our other miners too. What implications do you think this disagreement could have in terms of the iron ore price and the broader Australian economy, considering that we're a big exporter?
Absolutely. So it shows us that the Chinese are trying to diversify their supply chains and want to make sure that they reduce as much as they can a reliance to a single economy. Of course, that is Australia, but the blowback of that is that our largest miners are caught in the crosshairs. So the accusations here is that more or less that BHP has exceeded its limits of the amount of iron ore that it can sell into the country, that once more, the Chinese want to maintain that kind of diversification and obviously punish any sort of behaviour which sort of compromises those ends. The concern for us is, of course, that that is something that will continue to persist for some time, that will affect the sales to that country by our big miners. And there's also potentially fears, too, that that could spread to other commodity exports eventually, too. Iron ore has sort of stabilised as far as as far as prices, but also in terms of the volumes exported into China. But things like copper and other raw materials is picking up significantly. There's the fear that maybe similar decisions by the Chinese will be made to affect other commodity exports. So in the big picture, it's not a good thing for the Australian economy necessarily. It's obviously not a good thing for the iron ore miners. And, we did see, obviously, investors respond with selling, BHP in particular, but also the broad mining complex today as well.
AI company Anthropic today has been formally labelled a supply chain risk, and it's the first US company to be labelled so. How much of a deal is this, and could this have wider implications for the AI and tech sector?
It could, and I think the way that I see it, there's two big implications here. There, all of a sudden becomes a country risk associated with investing in artificial intelligence, because investors will have to ask the questions before investing in certain companies. And of course, Anthropic remains a private company, so it's not something that is relevant to public markets yet. But there will have to be questions about, to what extent is a company exposed to certain country risks, because they may be at odds with the government of the day and face, these potential disruptions to business from government intervention. The other element to this too is that, we're really entering an age of economic nationalism where investors are increasingly looking to the actions of governments, whether that be how they spend money, so like carrots, for example, or how they potentially regulate or punish companies, the sort of, you know, sticks in terms of the carrots and sticks sort of incentives metaphor to sort of drive investment decisions and where money flows. So this kind of goes to show you that once more, we're in this age of sort of economic nationalism, that governments have an increasingly strong hand in the private sector and private business, and investors as a result have to adjust their portfolios and their investment behaviour accordingly.
There's a lot going on at the moment, but tonight we do have the US job numbers to look forward to, and it includes the unemployment rate as well. That's coming out later tonight. What's the market expecting there?
Moderating jobs growth and a steady unemployment rate for short. The unemployment rate is expected to remain around 4.3%. There is some data suggesting recently that the deterioration in labour market conditions that was certainly evident at the back end of last year and was one of the reasons why the US Federal Reserve decided to keep cutting interest rates is subsiding a little bit. The question is whether that is a trend that is going to continue, that the labour market is stabilising, or whether we continue to see some of that weakness in hiring continue. And that sort of, you know, raises the prospect again of, you know, further interest rate cuts from the US Federal Reserve. So the markets are still pricing in that there'll be a few cuts to come. There is still fears about inflation, even before the shock that we got this week to energy prices. So this data will be a really crucial input to sort of inform expectations of future rate cuts at a time where, again, because of inflationary risks, the number of rate cuts in the market are being priced out.
That was Kyle Rotter from Capital.com, and he concludes our podcast today. Thank you for joining me. I'll be back on Monday. In the meantime, please subscribe to the On the Money podcast on Apple or Spotify.
This SBS On the Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. Content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.
The next generation of Ray-Ban Meta is here. The Wayfarer Gen 2 AI glasses, now at Harvey Norman. Capture life hands-free with an ultra-wide 12-megapixel camera shooting bold photos and 3K video. Enjoy open-ear audio for music, calls and podcasts while staying aware of your surroundings. With Meta AI, get answers, capture content and navigate your day using only your voice. Plus, enjoy up to 8 hours of battery life. Ray-Ban Meta Wayfarer Gen 2, starting at $598 at Harvey Norman. Go!